From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It was a tough sell to make the case for military action and Russian-led diplomacy to avoid military action, all in the same speech. President Obama's had a lot of needles to thread. He tried to boil it down last night to a core question against the image of gassed children killed by Syrian chemical weapons.
The question now is what the United States of America and the international community is prepared to do about it. Because what happened to those people, to those children, is not only a violation of international law, it's also a danger to our security.
So what to do about it? Strike? Talk? Nothing? This hour On Point, reaction to the president's big speech on Syria from Congress and from you. David Gergen is with us and a lineup of members of Congress. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What did you make of it? The speech, the call for a green light to strike militarily, the call for diplomacy first with the Russians, the whole picture. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We will talk in this hour with three members of Congress, Texas Republican Michael Burgess, Florida Democrat Alan Grayson, a fierce opponent of U.S. military intervention, and ranking Democratic member of the House Committee on Foreign Affairs, New York Democrat Elliot Engel. But joining me now from Washington is David Gergen, former advisor to four U.S. presidents, author of Eyewitness to Power, The Essence of Leadership, Nixon to Clinton, director of the Center for Public Leadership at the Harvard Kennedy School. David Gergen, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. It's good to be here with you again.
It's great to have you. What did you make of the president's address last night?
Tom, I thought it was a clean, clear, crisp speech, the best he's given on Syria. I was especially impressed with the way he addressed the various doubts that have arisen, the questions that have arisen. That was an effective way to give a speech. But at the same time, as you suggest, it's very difficult to cover war and peace in 15 minutes. I'm not at all clear that he made the sale he wanted to make. I'm sure he moved some Democrats. The polls, instant polls overnight, suggest he moved some people. But I don't think he's climbed that steep hill. And his best hope now is, and I don't think it's a very strong hope, is that this diplomacy will work. All of us want peace. And there's a rush to this peace proposal. But as we get into the details, there's going to be a considerable question whether we're making a pact with the devil.
The nation and Congress, and I'm sure we'll hear it in this hour, have been so resistant to the idea of a military strike. Can you recall, David Gergen, a precedent for a president in a White House speech making the call for something like war and peace, diplomacy, all in one speech, 15 minutes or not?
I cannot. It reflects the head-spinning changes that have been taking place in the last 48 hours on the diplomatic front. I think most Americans welcome the fact that the president is exploring the diplomatic option, and maybe it will lead somewhere. But anyone who's been through this and recognizes the odious quality of the people we're dealing with, after all, when you look at Assad and Vladimir Putin, it's hard to think of two more unsavory leaders around the world. One's a butcher and the other's a thug in the minds of many in the foreign policy community. That makes it very, very difficult to see how you actually get a deal that's going to hold. And I think that's confused things. But give the president credit for trying. As I say, I think he made his best effort. What has been surprising to me, Tom, is that historically, since World War I, presidents on 18 occasions have gone to Congress asking for authorization to use force in one way or another. Presidents have succeeded on 18 occasions. Every single time Congress has said yes. And clearly, just a day or two ago, the president was on the verge of being the first president to be rejected by Congress on that request.
Why do you think that is this time?
It's a very good question. Obviously, it has a lot to do with the mood of the country after 12 years essentially of being at war. We are obviously, better than almost anyone else, we're on September 11th for this very day. I think, Tom, didn't September 11th help to bring you to National Public Radio?
It did indeed. I mean, in the aftermath of that, the call went out, they pulled me in, and here we are now all these years later, still in some ways dealing with the aftermath of that.
Well, that's right. And of course, it's gone on and on and on. And So Americans are naturally wary, and they're wary that this is that a strike, pinprick or unbelievably small, take your choice, whether it's the president's character, you know, anti-characterization is not going to be a pinprick, and John Kerry saying, no, it's unbelievably small. Right. Take your choice. Many are worried that we're going to get drawn in, that inevitably we're going to be taking sides, and this thing will expand, and they don't want to do that. The situation in Syria is a civil war. Do we really want to be in the middle of it? The people who are opposing the Assad regime, and many of them are al-Qaeda, and those are hardly our friends. And frankly, I do think that the way the administration has handled this has not increased public confidence. There is a real sense that as much as people want this president to succeed, and they do, and as much as they admire him as a human being, that the foreign policy handling of something like this in foreign policy is not his strength, and this has not been his finest hour. It's been, you know, it's been such a contrast to when he took out bin Laden. That was so well executed, and you have to salute him for the way he and his team handled that. This time around, this team and this environment, for whatever reason, they seem to not get their signal straight. Nothing holds for more than 2 or 3 days. Yeah. This zigzag has become so prominent that I think it's bothering everybody. You know, it's not just the right that's going after him. Look after Maureen Dowd went after him with a pitchfork today.
Yeah, and we'll hear from Alan Grayson, who's fiercely opposed. I mean, it's one thing to go after a single leader, even of a terrorist group, another to deal with a whole messy country in civil war. There was a lot of clarity in this speech, but it was clarity around a kind of nuance that I think is a little bit of a stranger to this sort of speech from an American president. But this president, in a way, has to make it. He has pushed hard against American military intervention. Here's a little clip from last night, David, where he's looking to have it both ways. We're not the world's policeman, but we got to get in here.
America's not the world's policeman. Terrible things happen across the globe, and it is beyond our means to right every wrong. But when, with modest effort and risk, we can stop children from being gassed to death, and thereby make our own children safer over the long run, I believe we should act.
President Obama last night. David Gergen, is it possible that Americans have become immune to that call? Let's go out and do the right thing.
I think they'd be less immune if there were more countries with us. I mean, the fact is, on this occasion, the multinational coalition of the willing has become the coalition of the unwilling. In the past, you know, presidents have gone to war in the last 10 years or so, whether it's President George Bush Sr., Bill Clinton, or George Bush Jr., they've gone to war with a large coalition. And in this case, we look like the Lone Ranger going in, and I think that bothers people. And there's something else here that I think is edging on people, and that is we have a president who is himself very ambivalent about this. One has a sense that had he not drawn the red line in that off-the-cuff comment August a year ago, that we wouldn't be doing this. That absent big international coalition, absent the will of the country, absent the will of the Congress, absent a Security Council resolution, absent NATO, that we wouldn't be going in alone like this. And I think that's given people a lot of pause.
It seemed as though the Russian diplomatic alternative or way out, depending how you look at it, came out of nowhere. In other words, being put out, no, from the White House and others. You know, this comes on the heels of plenty of conversation with the Russians over a year or more about can we do something about these chemical weapons. Here was the president last night, David, about the diplomatic path and Russia and the Assad regime.
It's too early to tell whether this offer will succeed. And any agreement must verify that the Assad regime keeps its commitments. But this initiative has the potential to remove the threat of chemical weapons without the use of force, particularly because Russia is one of Assad's strongest allies.
So there it is. But we're not one of Russia's strongest allies. And already at the United Nations, they're doing more than dragging their feet. They're actively resisting this French and now American call to get this into the Security Council Chapter 7, something with teeth in it. The Russians are saying no to that. I mean, here we are, the president saying, let's be ready to strike militarily, but wait, just hold back on that while we do this other thing. I guess did he have to make that case last night because he'd already made such a case for the strike? The momentum on that he had to pick up and run with?
In retrospect, I'm sure people at the White House are asking themselves, had we not scheduled that speech Tuesday night, would we have waited a few days to let the diplomatic maneuvers play out and see if there's anything real there? Everybody wants this to succeed if possible, but it's been let's go back to the zigzag question. When this first came up publicly, it was John Kerry in a press conference in Britain, right? Mm-hmm. And he was asked a question, and he talked about it hypothetically, and then he dismissed it. He said that we can't trust the Syrians to do this. This is impossible. Won't happen. Can't happen. Mm-hmm. Within 12 hours, the administration had reversed itself and was embracing, saying this is a potential breakthrough. And and now everybody's celebrating because, of course, Congress doesn't want to take a vote. And so they're all rallying around it because they want to avoid having to take what would be a very, very difficult vote for many of them. And so we wrapped ourselves around it. And now as we get closer to the real conversations with the Russians, people are having second thoughts and saying, well, maybe this is not going to work. After all, the Russians are imposing conditions. In order to get this passed in the Security Council, the United States would have to renounce all use of force. And by the way, we, the Russians, would continue to arm Assad, but you've got to stay out of it. Well, the Americans are not going to sign on to that. And when you get down to the hard case of how you actually verify this, that is a nightmare how you verify one of these things. You can't do it in a few weeks, I guarantee you that.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the president's big speech on Syria last night, the case he's making, and how it is striking Congress and you. David Gergen is with us, advisor to four presidents, Nixon, Ford, Reagan, and Bill Clinton. David Gergen, please stand by in Washington. I want to jump in with our representatives here from Congress. First, Republican Michael Burgess of Texas. Texas 26th District. He's come out against the proposal for intervention in Syria, but there's been a lot of change here and the big speech last night. Congressman Burgess, thank you very much for joining us. What did you think of the speech?
Oh, hi, Tom, and thanks for having me on. Mm-hmm. Well, I did watch the speech last night. I got to tell you, it was odd. I mean, I do, as far as delivery goes, I thought the president delivered a good speech, but you just kept having to scratch your head and ask yourself, why in the world were we even here in the first place? The strikes that were talked about last week, which you're correct in saying that I oppose those, because I do. What was the urgency that the president, the call to arms that the president was making? That's what the speech was supposed to be about. It was supposed to go to the American people and explain why the strikes were necessary.
But three quarters of the speech was about that last night, wasn't it?
Yeah. And then it shifted gears, but we're going to wait. And we're going to wait because now we trust the Russians. You're the commander in chief. I'm glad we're not launching cruise missiles today in the eastern Mediterranean, to make no mistake about it. Do I trust the Russians to be in charge of our foreign policy in an area of the world that's so dangerous we don't even want to go there?
I mean, I'm sure the president would say not in charge, but working with, and how else do you think you get out of a military situation in a pickle like this? But let me put this piece of tape to you, Congressman Burgess,
sure,
if I may, because this was from the president last night. He had its equivalent for Democrats, and we will hear that. But here he was speaking to Republicans saying, look, you've been so determined to have a big, powerful military and have projected American power around the world so enthusiastically. What about now when we see this horrible chemical weapons attack and it could come back one day, one way or another, to hit the United States? Here's the president talking to Republicans. He says, to my friends on the right.
To my friends on the right, I ask you to reconcile your commitment to America's military might with a failure to act when a cause is so plainly just.
Okay, Republican Michael Burgess, what about it? Just cause here, a lot of dead people piled up chemical weapons. That's against all kinds of international agreements. And the president says, Republicans, what about it?
Wait a minute. Of course, it was a Republican president, Dwight David Eisenhower, who in 1954 said you should never get involved militarily for purely emotional reasons. And I will stipulate the emotional aspect of those videos we've seen from people suffering from the attack. But honestly, to commit the largest and greatest military in the world on an emotional response, we're mad because you gassed your own people. We don't even know for a fact that that is a true statement. But if it were, now we're going to launch an attack of the United States military on your country. You don't know what happens after that starts.
But let's back up. I mean, an emotional appeal, as you say, certainly was there. The president trying to get the country's and your attention. But he did not leave it to simply an emotional appeal. He made the case, look, these chemical weapons, if they're used here and there's no pushback, they'll be used elsewhere. And ultimately, it will be American GIs pulling on gas masks and risking death from chemical weapons if we don't stop it here. It wasn't just emotional. He said there's a national interest, security interest here, Congressman.
Well, look, and Saddam Hussein was held accountable for the use of chemical weapons. It did take 18 years for that accountability to be extracted, but indeed it was, and it was extracted by his own people who meted out justice in their own way. I don't think for a moment that the use of chemical weapons will go unpunished, but does it need to be punished this week or before the Russian intervention? Did it need to be punished this week with the launch of cruise missiles on another country? And again, you don't really have control of the situation once you start that. Now, people keep saying it's an unbelievably small strike. How is a cruise missile landing on a runway in Damascus an unbelievably small strike?
I guess that was the president's point, lesson, sort of counterpoint to John Kerry's language there. David Gergen, come in here for a moment. What about the president's explicit challenge to Republicans there? How do you reconcile, you know, this big commitment to American might with a failure to act when the cause, he said, is so plainly just? David.
Well, many Republicans are not convinced that this is actually going to achieve very much and that it's going to inject us into a war that would become wider. And, you know, they feel burned by the Iraq war, too. And so there's a reluctance. But I'm very curious, if I might, Tom, to ask the congressman, because I'm really interested in Congressman Burgess about this. The president's now going to go down the diplomatic track. If that fails and he comes back to Congress in 2 weeks after this speech, do you think his chances of getting an authorization have gone up, gone down, or haven't been changed by the speech?
My immediate reaction would be to say they have not changed. What will change if it's 2 weeks later, the immediacy is somewhat lost because of the fact of 2 weeks having passed.
So do you think it's
even with perhaps a slight negative.
So from your point of view, the likelihood is if he comes back to Congress, he's going to lose in the House and may well lose in the Senate.
That would be my read as we evaluate the situation today.
Was the same this week, David, yeah. Wasn't it? Was
that,
it not?
It was. So
part of the reason for the push-off.
What I think, Tom, is that for better or for worse, the possibility of a U.S. strike has receded dramatically. I'm not sure it's ever going to happen now.
Congressman Burgess, David Gergen, please stand by. Carl in Nashville, Tennessee. Let me begin to bring our listeners in. Carl, you are on the air.
Well, I believe that the president is going in the right direction. I believe that keeping the ships right there in the Mediterranean is a good move. But at the same time, he's still trying to come with a diplomatic solution. How about that? We have a president that can chew bubble gum and walk at the same time. How refreshing.
Yep.
Two big things have come out of this to me is, one, he actually got Syria to admit that they had chemical weapons, which I think is lost in this.
Yep.
Number two, he got the Republicans to go against the war. When have Republicans ever been against a war? for me personally, you asked the question to David, why is Congress going against this particular president after 18 times authorizing some kind of military response in this country? And I believe personally as a black American that history is going to judge white Republicans very harshly. No one wants to put it out there, but to me, this is what it is. It's a black president in America. The racial undertones have been so.
Let us pick up both of those. Michael Burgess, if we can go first to Carl's depiction here. He says, look, this looks like a very reasonable president to him. Something really bad has been done, something nobody wants to see happening all over the world. So the president puts the ships there, says, we're going to hit you for that. We're going to back you off that use. But we're going to try to do something diplomatically in the meantime to actually get rid of the weapons.
Yeah,
Why isn't that very reasonable?
Well, it would be if they hadn't backed into the diplomatic channel completely accidentally, or at least that's the way it appears to me.
Well, you have to live in real time. Things happen. Opportunities arise.
Terry Carey spoke about something that, in an attempt to be dismissive, that now has become national policy. Look, I'm great with that. Yeah, I didn't believe that the correct thing to do was to do a shot across the bow in Syria. We, you know, as far as confirmatory evidence that Bashar al-Assad was the one who launched the attacks, it's still, I said last week, it's thin. I stand by that comment today. I am grateful we are not putting our men and women into this conflict where, in my opinion, they don't belong. But I felt the same way about Libya. And, of course, the president did not come to the Congress on Libya. He went to the international community and sort of made an announcement from the boarding walk of a plane on the way to Brazil.
To the other point, did you hesitate with President Bush on even thinner evidence to Carl's point about, I don't know, maybe even race?
All right, Tom, here is something to bear in mind. There are probably 300 members of Congress or more who have never voted on an authorization for the use of military force, myself among them. Mm. That vote was taken in October of 2002. The term before I arrived in the United States Congress. That's why I think it's absolutely preposterous that there's even a hint of what that gentleman was talking about. Look, the interests of the country come first. The president is the president. He makes the decisions. Now, I can be uncomfortable with the president's leadership. I can be uncomfortable with the president's decisions. But just like with President Bush, he had the authorization for the use of military force in Iraq. It was given to him by the House and the Senate in 2002. Once the troops are there, absolutely, I'm going to, and I've said this on other radio shows and other television shows, I would be supportive of whatever it takes to support the troops once they're engaged, once they set foot on foreign soil. Yes, it is the obligation of the United States Congress to support them with the correct appropriation.
Congressman Burgess, we've got it. I know we have to let you go. We're grateful to you for being with us. Michael Burgess of Texas 26th District, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Tom. Bye-bye.
I want to turn right now. David Gergen, stand by. Representative Alan Grayson joins us. Democrat, Florida. Florida's 9th District there. Member of the House Committee on Foreign Affairs. He has been outspoken in opposition to a military strike here. Congressman Grayson, thanks very much for joining us. What did you make of the president's appeal speech last night?
Well, I'm pleased that we're not going to be immediately engaging in military intervention in Syria, and I think I join something like 250 million other Americans with a sense of relief. And I join many members of Congress in that. According to the current Washington Post whip count, only 26 members of the House were supporting an attack, and 253 of us now are against it. So I think we breathe a sigh of relief, and we're happy that we're going to give peace a chance. However, having come to the Congress for our advice and consent, I think many of us feel a little disappointed that the president simply hasn't listened to what we've been saying, which is that the specific attack that he has planned out would be pointless, would be dangerous, and there are better options available.
Let me ask, I put his sort of poke to the Republicans on with the Congressman Burgess there. Let me put this one on with you, Alan Grayson, if I may. This was the president in his speech last night talking with Democrats to his more liberal members of Congress, such as yourself, no doubt. To my friends on the left, he said, well, let's listen, let the president speak for himself.
To my friends on the left, I ask you to reconcile your belief in freedom and dignity for all people with those images of children writhing in pain and going still on a cold hospital floor. For sometimes resolutions and statements of condemnation are simply not enough.
Alan Grayson, did he get under your skin with that comment? Is he calling you on the carpet there for not enough spine in the face of moral outrage and national security threat?
That's not true at all. And in fact, among Democrats, 3 or 4 to 1, we oppose this particular option for military intervention in the Syrian civil war. It's not a question of left or right, and I think that shows that the president really has not been listening carefully. His specific plans, what he's done, is something that is universally regarded in Congress as it would be ineffective and it would be dangerous. And the issue, which the president doesn't seem to be able to understand, is not what happened. The issue is ultimately what are we going to do about it and whether it would do any good. The president's proposal would not actually prevent a future attack. The president's proposal would not actually even reduce the stock of chemical weapons in Syria. All it would do, according to myself and many of members of Congress, is to raise this enormous risk that these weapons will be no longer under the command and control of the Syrian army, and in fact fall into the hands of the Mujahideen rebels who are fighting the army right now and spread throughout the region and possibly throughout the world.
Congressman, so what would you do? The president says it's not enough just to be upset.
Well, first, we now have an option, which I think actually would solve the problem, and it highlights the
Russia
option. The president's plan. That's right. The option to either dismantle these weapons or put them in the hands of third parties, at least as long as the civil war proceeds. And I think that when you have an option like that and you see that it's available, you realize how far the president's own plan falls short and why so many members of Congress on the left and on the right have mobilized against it.
But the president says you would not have had this option if it was not for his, he would say, readiness to strike.
Well, I mean, the president can take all the credit he feels he deserves. That's not the point.
No, but talk about it on its merits. Do you think this would have happened and come about without the threat of a strike?
Well, I mean, we have the German intelligence reports that were released through Reuters and released through the Guardian that indicate that this was an unauthorized attack and that it was actually done contrary to the direction of President Assad. If that's the case, then President Assad is probably as anxious and desperate to get rid of these chemical weapons that he no longer has full control over as anybody else.
So here we are. Russia won't take it to the Security Council, at least not yet. Do you have a president who's not going to have Congress behind him, yourself included, who's not going to have a diplomatic solution, and is in big trouble in a second term, Alan Grayson?
No, that's irrelevant. Honestly, I hear people make a reference to that. First of all, that's not the way it works in Washington, D.C. As soon as we're beyond this, we're going to be hip deep in the question of how to keep the government open beyond September 30th. And it's unfortunate in the extreme that we've spent almost 2 weeks now talking about this when we should have been dealing with this problem that is now in our face and 19 days away.
David Gergen, what do you make of Democrats like Alan Grayson and their, many of them, pretty tough opposition to the president here, even now?
I think they're speaking their consciences. I salute people in politics who are willing to be independent, take a stand. He could potentially pay a price for this in various ways in the future. But I do have a question for Congressman Grayson, if I might.
Yes.
And that is this. There is a good chance, as you know, that this diplomatic solution will not work, that for whatever reason there'll be barriers and disagreements and it may fall apart over the next 2 weeks. Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican, South Carolina, said last night, if it fails, he would urge the Congress not to come back to Congress and seek a vote, but just go ahead with a strike anyway.
He would urge
the president to do that. He thinks he's too far down the road.
Yeah.
He would urge the president not to come back to Congress. Do you feel, Congressman Grayson, that if this fails, he should come back to Congress and get the vote one way or the other?
Well, obviously. I mean, the purpose of getting the advice and consent of Congress in the context of this is because, first of all, Congress has the constitutional authority to declare war. But secondly, we're giving him meaningful advice. We've seen the classified briefings. We know the plan of attack. And what we're doing overwhelmingly is telling him this won't work. And it doesn't matter whether he does it today or he does it next month or he does it 3 years from now. It simply won't work. It won't disarm the Syrians. It won't end the civil war. It won't displace Assad. It won't even reduce the stock of these terrible weapons. All it will do is make it more likely they'll fall into the hands of the extremists and proliferate further. That's the problem here. And that's the unfortunate situation. Now that we've got a different option on the table, the Russian option, that underscores how much better that option is than this option.
Representative Alan Grayson, Democrat of Florida, the 9th District there. Joining us today from Washington, Congressman Grayson, thank you very much for your time and thoughts.
Thank you very much.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the president's big speech on Syria, the case he's making, and how it is striking Congress and you. David Gergen is with us, a four-time advisor or advisor to four presidents, Nixon, Ford, Reagan, and Clinton, author of Eyewitness to Power. Lots of reaction sent the president's speech. Here was Republican Kentucky Senator Rand Paul last night with Fox News.
Well, it didn't quite convince me. You know, I think what he needed to lay out for the American public was a compelling American interest or national security interest in Syria.
And here was Bob Corker. This, of course, Republican, top Republican on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, saying Congress ought to hit pause and see if the diplomatic option, which the president endorsed last night as a possible path here, would work.
My trust level for the Russians regarding this is that it's very, very low, okay? But I think when this type of offer is put forth, you're foolish not to to try to see if it's real.
David Gergen raises the question with Alan Grayson. If diplomacy fails, should the president go even without congressional approval and hit Syria? Here was South Carolina Republican Lindsey Graham on that front last night.
After the leader of the free world made such an impassionate plea for moral outrage and a response, it's impossible for him not to react if diplomacy fails, not to act. So if diplomacy fails, he's painted himself in a corner.
David Gergen, let's go right to caller Sam in Worcester, Massachusetts. Sam, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to give perspective from the military. I am serving in the military, okay, and I have deployed four times now in support of Operation Enduring Freedom.
That's Afghanistan.
And I just want to remind people that your military is tired. You're talking about people that have served in multiple deployments between Iraq and Afghanistan. Families that are being destroyed as a result of this, our veterans are suffering in silence. We're having about 22 veterans a day commit suicide, and here we are contemplating another campaign. And I just want to let people know that if these people in Congress are so willing to go fight in this war, and our president as well, then let's gladly arrange them to be as part of the first wave to go in on this. Because when we're saying we as a collective, you're not realizing that it's not really we that are fully committed.
It's particular individuals, yourself included. Sam, though, what about the president saying it will not be boots on the ground? He said it again last night. This is missiles from afar, not a pinprick, a serious strike, but not boots, meaning the you won't be deployed there, Sam.
Well, I would argue that Pearl Harbor was an airstrike that didn't involve boots on the ground either, and look what that turned into. So you can't engage in this without really taking a step back and looking at it. We're dealing with a situation here that is extremely volatile. And for me, from a perspective, having served in Afghanistan and having to deal with, you know, people that are al-Qaeda based, and now these are going to be the people that we're supposed to be allies with. This is ridiculous.
Well, I mean, I don't know about that. They try and draw this line between the moderate opposition and al-Qaeda. Sam, I appreciate your call. David Gergen, there's the weary voice of four deployments in Afghanistan, speaking just in practical terms about military readiness. But I'm sure the president would say, don't worry, Sam, it's not about you. It's going to be missiles off those ships.
Well, it's good to hear the voices of the military. You know, only 1% of the people in this population has actually served in these wars, and they've done a valiant job, and they're wonderful folks when they come back. The president's view is, look, Sam, we do plan to do this through Tomahawk missiles from ships, and we're promising not to put boots on the ground. But I understand his reservations. Every recent Secretary of Defense, Bob Gates, Leon Panetta, they've taken the view, no more of these wars. We've had enough, especially a discretionary war, a war of choice. We definitely should not be doing that. The president obviously is trying to avoid that while also taking the moral stand he thinks is necessary. But I'm very sympathetic with where Sam's coming from.
I want to bring Congressman Elliot Engel in right here. Sam, thank you for your call. Thank you for your service. Representative Engel is Democratic member of Congress from New York's 16th District. He's ranking Democratic member of the House Committee on Foreign Affairs. He has been supportive of the president. Congressman Engel, thank you very much for being with us. What did you make of the president's address appeal last night?
I thought it was a great appeal. I thought that he was very succinct and didn't give a long speech and really laid out the case. We stand for something, and we really just can't countenance these weapons of mass destruction are being used to kill children and everyone else. I think that he certainly laid out the case, certainly talked about no boots on the ground, and that this will not evolve into a large war. This is not a war. This is a strike. And I really think he made the case, and I think he said something else that's very important. When he spoke about the Russian proposal to have Syria destroy all of its weapons of mass destruction, he said that it was the credible threat of U.S. force that made the Russians and Assad come to the table, and I think that's true.
If the president's making such a good case, why does he have so little public support, and why did it look, I mean, at least by everybody's count that I've seen, that he wasn't going to get the vote in Congress this week, and maybe never, Congressman Engel?
Well, he was going to get the vote in the Senate. In the House, it was more problematic, and it was never going to be this week. It was always going to be next week. So that's nothing that really changed. Look, people are war weary in this country, and so am I. People are tired of war. People are skeptical when it's said, "Don't worry, there won't be boots on the ground. This won't lead us into a quagmire," and that's understandable. And he understands that, but he also understands that for the United States to just abdicate its responsibility is the wrong thing for us to do as well. And so I think the president is trying to strike up a compromise whereby we would hit Assad and we would make it harder for him to use chemical weapons again, while not getting ourselves into a quagmire of another war.
Congressman, we have a call for you from Ann Arbor, Michigan. John is calling. John, you're on the air.
Thank you, Tom, mm-hmm. for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I want to commend Representative Engel for the leadership he's shown on the issue of Syria, which the president has not provided. In the absence of any effective presidential leadership, Congress needs to step up to the plate. The idea of a one-off, limited, punitive strike by the U.S. and its allies will surely inflict more gratuitous violence on the long-suffering Syrians without enhancing our security. Surely, Congress could come up with a better approach through a statutory act.
But wait a minute, John. Congressman Engel is supporting the president in his call for the military to stand by for exactly that kind of strike. What's the problem with it?
The problem is that strike will not do the job. It just imposing more gratuitous violence on long-suffering Syrians, and I don't believe it will enhance our security.
Congressman Engel, let me put John's point to you. What do you say?
Well, in the long run, I personally am for arming the well-vetted rebels. I put in a bill earlier this year to give aid to those rebels, the Free Syria Army under General Idris, and I think that we should be strengthening them. It should be a two-pronged fight. But I think the president knows here what he can get and what he can't get, and there is no stomach in the Congress for moves that would bog us down into another war. And so I think that what the president is trying to do is find a center here, a common ground, whereby we can express our revulsion at using chemical weapons without getting us bogged down into a larger war. I think ultimately what's going to happen in Syria will be decided by Syrians, and that's why I think that we should be aiding the rebels without getting ourselves involved in the war. And hopefully what will happen is we will go to a political solution whereby if neither side thinks they can win, we can have a conference, which we were supposed to have a few months ago with the Russians, to talk about a post-Assad Syria. But what changed the calculation is that Assad had been losing the civil war, and then with the injection of Hezbollah going across the border from Lebanon into Syria, Hezbollah is a terrorist group backed by Iran, it turned the tide in favor of Assad in the Syrian civil war. So now Assad feels the momentum is on his side, so he's not interested in negotiating anything for post-Assad Syria. We've got to get back to that point again where we can have a political solution, not a military solution.
Let me get Farshid on here from Nashville, Tennessee. Farshid, you're on with Congressman Elliot Engel.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I was born and raised in Iran, but I've lived in the United States for the past 40 years. Okay. But I keep up with the geopolitics of the Middle East quite a bit. From my perspective, the leadership of most countries in the Middle East understand one thing and only one thing, and that is power. The only way they operate is based on power politics. And regrettably, what I see, the way the United States is handling this situation in Syria, does not project a sense of decisiveness and a sense of power. And as a result, I believe the overall influence of the United States in the Middle East has been on the decline, and consequently, the prestige of Russia has been in the ascendant.
But Farshid, I'll give it to Elliot, the Congressman Engel, but let me just ask you, the United States poured all kinds of power into Iraq and Afghanistan. Has that enhanced our standing?
But what has happened over the past 5 years, we have been withdrawing consistently out of the Middle East. We did not negotiate the status agreement in Iraq. Therefore, we have no presence in Iraq. That's quite unprecedented. And also, we'll be withdrawing from Afghanistan. Give it 10 years, both these countries will go back to what it was. Therefore, the impression in the Middle East is that the United States, on a methodical, slow pace, is withdrawing from the Middle East and what that vacuum will be filled by Russia.
Farshid, thanks for your call. Congressman Engel, what do you make of that perspective, that fear?
Well, the alternative would be for us to be endlessly bogged down in fighting wars in the Middle East. I don't think anybody has the stomach for that. But I will say one thing, which I agree. I think Iran is watching us very closely now. When we say to Iran that we will not permit you to have a nuclear weapon, and all options are on the table, I think Iran is watching to see our resolve in Syria now to determine what they believe our resolve will be a year down the line when they are at a point of having a nuclear weapon. So I think from a geopolitical point of view, what we do in Syria is very, very important, even beyond Syria.
Let me put the David Gergen question to you, Congressman Engel. If diplomacy fails, do you think the president could then get a vote from Congress to hit Assad's regime? If not, should he go ahead without it?
Well, I think that would be the hope, if diplomacy fails, that the president would be able to convince more people by saying, well, I tried my best, and look what we did, and look what we have, and now we've got to strike. And I think he hopes that that would prevail. If he didn't get the vote, I think it would be difficult for him to strike, having gone to the Congress. I took the position, and still do, that the president needn't go to Congress for something like this, that according to the War Powers Act, he could strike and then come to Congress within 60 days. We've had other presidents do this. We had Bill Clinton in Kosovo. We've had Reagan in Grenada. We've had Bush, the first Bush, in Panama. There's Obama in Libya, so there's ample precedent of doing that. But the president, which I understand, felt strongly about coming to Congress, and I think that he has to really try to get the vote. And let's hope diplomacy works. That's all I can say.
Congressman Elliot Engel, ranking Democratic member of the House Committee on Foreign Affairs, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Tom.
David Gergen, do you think the president was right to go to Congress in the first place? You've sat in the White House, in the Oval Office, and worked with a lot of presidents.
Well, Tom, I thought it was one among the mistakes that were made, and I don't think we need to relitigate everything that happened. But ordinarily, a president who's thinking about going to Congress would round up his top people and say, look, let's explore this with members of Congress and see. And it was a shock to me that when he made up his mind, he took that walk with his chief of staff, Dennis McDonough, then talked to his staff, and then resolved it right there without a lot of, you know, the calls. I think they called in Vice President Biden and said, Joe, here's what we're thinking about doing. Why don't you call some of your friends up there? Because people tell you one thing on the phone, but what they really believe underneath when they get pressed is they may not, I think a lot of them didn't want it to come to Congress. Yeah, they were talking publicly, oh, he ought to consult us and so forth, but they didn't really want to make a vote. That's why they're rallying to this Russian proposal so quickly. So I think in the end, you're talking about a Tomahawk cruise missile strike. I was there in the White House when President Clinton ordered a Tomahawk cruise missile strike. Never occurred to us we're going to go to Congress before that. It is a relatively small operation as these things go. So I was surprised he didn't. The White House didn't have a full grip on the fact that they had a very, very high prospect of losing in Congress. And now he's got this mess on his hands because if this diplomatic initiative, which we all hope succeeds, but if it fails, and he's got a Congress who's going to vote no, and he's got people saying, you know, you can't go now without Congress, then he's got no options. And he just made up a case as the commander-in-chief of the most powerful military in the world and of the most powerful nation that we're going to act. That's a real problem for him. Maybe not in the budget negotiations here at home, but to go back to what Farshid was saying, it's a real problem for us in the Middle East.
Congressman Grayson says, you know, the budget conversations will clear the slate. You say maybe domestically, but not globally. Could you picture this ending up with no diplomatic solution, chemical weapons still there, no strike, just a shrug?
I fear that's where we're heading. I hope that there is some creative solution short of that. There may be something that can be done on the international stage. But the way the negotiations are going with the Russians, maybe John Kerry can turn it around on Thursday when he meets in Switzerland. I hope so. You know, I think all of us, again, hope that this is going to succeed diplomatically. But I must tell you, I think the prospects are minimal. And I think the prospects now of getting military action are minimal. And I think the president's got a real dilemma on his hands. Even after he gave a good speech, I think he's got a serious dilemma on his hands.
What about just going back and say, you know, those darn Russians, they let us down a sort of a bad alley here. We've got to do something. The strike has happened. My fellow Americans, the missiles are on the way.
Well, he could do that, and he's going to have a lot of screaming after he, you know, that would be a reversal of where he was about wanting to get the voice, he made the speech last night saying how important it was to have Congress with him. So you can do that, but you pay a price there, too. That's why I think I don't see many good options. I hope one comes soon, Tom.
Prices on all sides here. We'll see which ones get paid. David Gergen, author of Eyewitness the Power, the Essence of Leadership, Nixon to Clinton. It is always good to have you with us here. Thank you for joining us today,
David.
It's a
privilege, Tom. Thank you.
And our thanks to Congressman Elliot Engel, to Alan Grayson of Florida, to Congressman Michael Burgess of Texas. Thanks to all them and listeners for your very active conversation on Twitter, on Facebook, at our website. Check those out at On Point Radio and onpointradio.org. These are vigorous conversations with close listeners. We appreciate all of that input from you. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.